In fact, oil transportation considerations must have always lurked in the background. Late 2004 saw Albania, Macedonia, and Bulgaria sign a pact to begin the Trans-Balkans pipeline's construction. Much of the financing came from the U.S. government's overseas private investment corporation and private American firms, as originally proposed in 1996, when the corridor involved had been laid out as part of the Clinton administration's South Balkan Development Initiative. Whatever Clinton's expectations for the Caspian, he more than maintained the oil-related status quo in Iraq. He launched major attacks with aircraft and cruise missiles in January 1996, June 1996, and December 1998. He deployed troops near Iraq's borders in 1997 and 1998, Operations Phoenix Scorpion and Desert Thunder, after Baghdad had proposed oil concessions to Russia, China, and France. And on October 31st, he signed the Iraq Liberation Act of 1998, calling for regime change in Baghdad. 2 months earlier, Clinton had signed another finding, PL-105-235, that accused Iraq of building weapons of mass destruction, failing to cooperate with the United Nations, and being immaterial and unacceptable breach of its international obligations. This insistence, as we have seen, was essential to keeping Saddam Hussein hogtied by UN sanctions and thus unable to implement the French, Russian, and Chinese concessions. For boldness, though, none of the Clinton-era actions could compare with the far-reaching great game propositions of the one-time strategists for the first Bush administration gathered around Cheney and the project for a new American century. Regime change in Iraq became code for a second invasion. The Bush-Cheney administration, on taking office, embraced an oil-forward strategy with instant intensity. Plans were discussed in the spring and summer of 2001, well before the events of September, for hamstringing Iraq and convincing the Taliban in Afghanistan to accept construction of an American Unocal pipeline from Turkmenistan through Kabul to Karachi, Pakistan. Talks with the Taliban continued in the summer of 2001, but apparently soon collapsed. Duplicity seems to have been in the catbird seat. Multiple press reports from sources in Pakistan and elsewhere, all officially denied in Washington, had the American government planning to attack Afghanistan sometime in the autumn. Then the world changed. Besides intensifying existing oil and Middle Eastern pressures, on September 11th, the attack on the World Trade Center gave Washington policies a convenient new all-inclusive justification. Fighting terror was about everything, and everything was about fighting terror. Oil motivations, rarely a popular or easy foreign policy justification, could now be submerged within a primal response to a deep-seated national combination of fear, loathing, and outrage. Petroleum strategy could now become only a minor facet of an anti-terrorist mobilization. In the wake of September 11th, hardly anyone made the argument, which would be widespread by 2004, that America's oil quest and tactics had been provocative in the Middle East. This was especially true of the placement since 1990 of non-believer U.S. troops on the holy Saudi Arabian soil to which devout Muslims have made centuries of pilgrimages. Occasionally, the blurring of distinctions between energy, anti-terror, and military considerations in U.S. policymaking were obliquely acknowledged. In 2003, former White House speechwriter David Frum wrote in his Bush political biography, The Right Man, that the war on terror was designed to bring new stability to the most vicious and violent quadrant of the earth, and new prosperity to us all, by securing the world's largest pool of oil.